Testing, testing. Oh, look. Here, come and sit here for a minute.
Wake me when it's over.
Okay.
But this is fun.
All these things we should be talking
it's
about
just,
on the
it's
air.
It's fun. You're
yeah.
fun.
What were we
I really want to work with you. That'll be so much fun, Denton.
What do we want to work on?
A divorce thing.
The divorce TV show. Yeah.
Or anything else.
Okay. Well, you know.
We'll think about it.
We'll think about it. Now, are there any things that you want?
Yes, darling.
Anything that you particularly want to talk about? Anything? Do you have anything to promote or plug or, you know?
Just me. Just you know, my office, my
your
services.
Office, yeah. Have you ever done anything else than be a high-powered, shocky divorce lawyer?
Yeah, I did political campaigns, too.
Political campaigns?
In Illinois and Ohio. And I was so interested in the legal aspect of it that I said, this is it, I got to go back.
I have to be a lawyer.
That's what I'm meant to do.
Hey, let me introduce the show, because now I just push the record. I mean, we can obviously edit things in and out.
Cool.
Hello, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is Link Schwartz, stand-up comedian, storyteller, creepy actor, and... Oh, wait, no, that's not true. She's actually a high-powered Beverly Hills divorce attorney, which is much more interesting than having another comic on the show.
Oh,
people are getting
you,
tired of funny comics, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It gets tiring after a while. We're going to hear all about that in a moment. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is Link Schwartz. Hello there.
Hi, Denzel. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for waking up to come in.
Thank you.
You've been working hard recently.
Yes, I have. And it's always good to wake up. That's an important component of the day.
Yeah, waking up. I recommend it.
If you wake up, you know, the day has to be good, or at least somewhat successful because you're up.
That's true.
Yes.
There's another thing I recognize, that if something really bad happens first thing, like first thing in the day, then everything from there is up.
Yeah.
Like,
or it sets, so it kind of sets the day.
It sets the tone. Well.
Yeah. Or not. Depending on your attitude. It sounds like
attitude.
You would take the negative part and say, okay, that, thank you. I mean, that happened.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Well, the one I'm thinking about in particular, I was in India and I got up early in the morning to walk around the city and give like toys and things to kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I stepped in a culvert, like a sewage culvert. I had sandals on and, you know, it's like a lumpy pool
ugly.
Of fetid water.
Yeah.
And I, of course, washed my foot off. And I washed both feet just to be sure. But I said, hey, I stepped in a sewer in India. It's uphill from here.
Well, yeah, definitely.
It's
after that, yeah,
this is
it's all
be a
roses.
Great
yes.
day.
Yes.
Yeah, for that. Yeah, okay.
I like how you think.
Yeah. Well, you also have a very positive way of looking at the world.
I do.
Yeah, no, it's on your website. You know, a divorce lawyer with a positive view. Yeah, what? Tell me a little bit about that and how it affects your work.
There are dark moments in every divorce. There's always the other side to it, though.
Mm-hmm.
People get through it. One way or another, you're going to get through it. So what do you want the other side to look like? And that's kind of key, because when we look at our lives and when we're moving forward day to day, we always want to be the best we can and make tomorrow better, I think. So that's what we hope to accomplish.
That's a positive outlook.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, I mean, if you even when people are jerks, if you say, look, everyone's really doing the best they can, and sometimes it's not very good for whatever reasons, but they, you know, everybody wants that. That's better than walking around life saying people are assholes.
Right.
And
yes, and they suck.
Yeah.
But the thing is, a lot of people do suck.
Yeah, no, it's true.
And I think a lot of people have disorders that they bring to the table, too, that they can't help themselves.
All kinds of things.
Yes. So that, you know, it can make divorce uglier than it needs to be. Because they need to fight for whatever reason, or they need to have an upper hand for whatever reason.
Yeah, that's we talked recently. I mean, we met a couple of years ago when I was in the middle of doing my divorce.
Yes.
But then we talked recently because I've been working on this show. Right?
Yes.
This DIY show. Because yeah, there are DIY cooking shows and home improvement shows. So I want to do a DIY divorce.
I love it. That's kind of my thing, too.
Yeah.
Because
there's the outcome of your divorce. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen. Like, you're going to get divorced.
Yes.
You know,
and
especially
the outcome, in California.
Yeah, the outcome can change a little, but hopefully not that much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the experience.
Yes.
Of divorce that is totally up for grabs, and it can be really painful, or it can be less. I mean, it's not going to be pleasant.
Right. But, and then there's another factor, too, which is the financial factor.
Okay.
You know, if you lawyer up,
yeah.
You know, if you decide that I'm going to scorch the earth and spend $1 million or outspend you and have at least two or three lawyers and a forensic accountant and another expert to talk about the children, then you're talking about anywhere from $100,000 to $300,000. So what do you really want to do?
Right.
Do you want to, you know, have your lawyer take a very nice trip to Europe for the summer?
You know.
Have a college fund for your children or spend it on this divorce?
Right. Yeah.
Something to think about.
That, I mean, I would hope that the show would be about that. You know, to me, I've had a hard time to sell the show, but we'll talk about that. But yeah, I would love to help people really kind of say, what am I trying to do here?
Right.
If I just want to get divorced, mm-hmm. okay, that's great. But if what I'm doing is trying to get vindicated and beat the crap out of my insignificant
really
other.
Then we can't help them.
Yeah.
Then they need a shrink.
Do you turn down clients that have that kind
Yes.
of, you do?
Yes. Because I don't see the benefit to the person, and if they want to, you know, they can do that, but it's not something I really want to be involved with.
You don't enjoy it.
Right.
Okay.
I just think it serves no purpose other than to torture the other person, which I find very unproductive.
Yes.
You know?
Seems like it would be satisfying.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
It seems
on
like
some
the
level,
of it.
Yeah.
It's one of those shiny things that you're like,
I
just want to crush that asshole.
Well, that happens sometimes, too. And sometimes it is worth the fight.
Sometimes they need to be crushed.
It depends on how big an asshole the person is.
Yeah. No, I mean, if somebody takes a completely unreasonable stance, then you have to.
Yeah, I have many of those cases.
Have to go for it. Yeah.
Yes, you do.
It's too bad, though.
It is, but sometimes you really can't help it. When one side has a hidden agenda, mm-hmm. which is to really crush you and destroy you and scorch the earth, you have no choice.
You have to defend yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do really like the idea of empowering people to do their own. I see in court the lines on the self-help section of the court. And the lines go around the block sometimes. So people really want to do their own, a lot of people. And a lot of people can't afford lawyers. So I think it's a great service to provide to people.
Yes.
Yeah.
And do you have clients sometimes that come to you and say, like, how can we make this easy?
Yes.
Is it, you know, can we work together?
Yeah.
Can we both hire you, right?
Well, the two people can hire the same lawyer.
But they probably ask, right? They do ask. Yeah.
And quite often, we can send them to mediation, and before they sign off on an agreement, one of the parties, they can, you know, confer with me so I could tell them if it's a good deal or not a good deal or what else to ask for. And I think that's helpful, just having someone to be in your corner.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's freaky.
Yeah.
It's freaky.
Always.
Now, you're not married now.
No, I have a play husband.
A play husband? What does that mean?
It's the best thing ever. I am not married.
Okay, you have been married.
Yes.
Yeah,
I was married, I have children.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, given what I do, I don't want to ever get married again.
Okay, that was another question.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I know what goes into this.
Don't want to do it, but I have a wonderful play husband.
Okay.
Who also is cool not getting married. And we've been together 16 years, and I refer to him as my play husband.
Okay.
He refers lovingly as I'm his play wife.
So you like boyfriend, girlfriend, that you just
But
then like
I, no, I can't do that anymore.
Okay. No,
so I'm on to play husband.
Yeah, no, I see.
I think it's far more entertaining, and it meets our needs.
Yes.
So you should think about that for your next wife.
Well, even the last one, right? My third, we met, I was doing my third divorce. And just, if anybody doesn't know, I did all three of them myself, right?
Didn't hire any lawyers,
didn't go to court.
It was good.
Sometimes I still say, oh, it could have, it should have been different. You know what I mean? But then we would have had a fight to make it different.
Yes.
And then who knows?
Right. And you never really know the outcome because you're in front of this person who never met you.
Right.
Knows nothing about your life.
This is the judge.
The judge.
Yeah.
And makes a decision about your life. So it's a gamble.
And what's best for your family.
Right.
That person may have different views than you.
Yes.
Right? They don't understand your kids have certain issues,
I mean, they never met your children. They don't even know what your child looks like.
Right,
And you want this person to make a decision about their life. That's a lot to ask.
For the next 10, 15 years, you know, your retirement, it goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
I derailed myself. What the hell was I talking about?
Well, we can rail back. no problem.
So what's funny about divorce?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, tell me.
My God.
Yeah, what? You're not gonna,
you know, people are quirky. They're wonderful.
People are weird.
They're so entertaining.
Yeah.
When I was coming here, I was thinking about some funny incidents that have happened in court. I forgot to ask you. Well, you know, I'm not sure if I can curse or not.
I'll probably. It's not a radio.
I'll try not to.
It's up to you.
Yeah. I love cursing. It's part of my entertainment.
Feel free. I want you to be comfortable. That's what we're
doing. I was in court one day, and there was a litigant who was having sex with the family's dog.
Okay.
Which was vile. That was totally vile. But the best part that I really loved.
Wait, the litigant was a man or a
man?
A man having
sex.
Who was
having
sex
with the family dog.
Okay.
And so the other attorney that was defending the husband said, well, you know, the wife wouldn't give him sex, so what was he supposed to do? And so it's kind of a commentary on how we as divorce lawyers are, but it was also hilarious. I mean, it was hard to hold it in because what a defense. I mean, and what do? Do you put my visual was you put hot dogs around your neck and say, Fido, you know, it's our evening tonight.
Yeah.
And then I felt it was really kind of dog rape, which offended me. It was horrific.
Yeah, you can't have consent.
You can't just.
I mean, how do you get consent?
From the dog.
Yeah.
But people are crazy. They come up with, not crazy.
Wait, what kind of dog?
I don't remember the breed.
I mean,
what a defense. And then some of the other defenses. I had a paternity case where my client said he couldn't have possibly impregnated her because he has a crooked penis. This is what he says to the judge. You know, the people are just very creative and they're very funny. And then there was the time I lost my skirt in court. It actually fell down. That was.
And were you kind of standing and speaking?
Yes.
It wasn't even at the table.
It wasn't planned. I mean, do this. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good to know.
That was a good thing.
Yeah.
No, I was.
You planted a seed. Now I'm like, right. When I go to the IRS,
it was a little dramatic.
Maybe I'll lose my skirt. Yeah.
If you choose to wear one, that could enter, you know, be an entertainment factor while you're there.
Yes.
But it was a preliminary hearing. I was a young lawyer at the time, and the skirt didn't have a snap at the top. It was just a zipper, and I'm standing before the court, and it was a packed courtroom, and all of a sudden, I feel my skirt shoot to my ankles, and you know, you look down, you look up. I thought I would die. Fortunately, I had tights on.
You were wearing a slip? Is that why it went down so easy?
It just
the tights, yeah.
What, I mean, oh, my God. And as a young lawyer, you are so worried about your presentation and how you are. And here I am, skirtless, in court. So I looked down, I looked at the judge and opposing counsel, and I just said, if you think this is something, wait till you see what I do at trial. And then picked up my skirt and went on. But I'll never forget.
You got a laugh from that line,
yes,
right?
That was good.
That was good. That probably was great. But it released the tension. Everyone got to laugh because they really wanted to laugh.
Yeah.
You probably got a huge laugh at that one. Yeah.
But it was one of those most embarrassing highlights.
Right. Do you know any good lawyer jokes? I mean, there are always good lawyer jokes. You must hear
yeah,
them.
Yeah, you know, guys, I hear them all the time. I kind of tune them out.
You tune them out.
Yeah, they're just... I haven't found any, heard any okay. funny ones. Have you?
No, I mean, no, I don't really know any off the top of my head that I thought you would be the expert.
I would. No. I try and avoid them because I think they're not that funny.
Okay. Well.
But I wouldn't mind hearing one.
I mean, most of them are that people don't like lawyers. And
yes,
so as a lawyer, then it's kind of hard to, right?
Yeah.
Like three different kind of lawyers jump out of an airplane or there's no parachute. And, which one dies? Who cares? You know, I mean, there's those kinds of jokes.
Right.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't
not
think that.
That funny.
No, not that funny.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to just check that right off my list. Yeah. Not that funny. How was your divorce? Was it an easy divorce? Was it painful? Were you a divorce lawyer at that time?
No, I wasn't. And I actually never wanted to be one.
You never wanted to be a
divorce
lawyer?
Wanted to be. I didn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. I was doing criminal and civil rights.
Okay.
And divorce kept coming to me. So I thought...
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. We do have that in common.
We have that in common.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I just figured I'd make peace with it and it would go away. And I was working for a firm and being the only female, they kept giving me the divorce cases, which was fine.
Yeah.
But I found I was good at it, and I really liked it. And I can also make a difference, which means a lot to me, in terms of getting people through it and also calming people down when that's necessary and really looking at what's important.
Right.
Well,
helping them figure that out.
Yes.
I mean, it's such a stressful thing.
It's very stressful.
Yeah. I mean, obviously everybody knows that. But the thing that gets me is you've obviously had a difficult time with the marriage because now you're here to get divorced. Whether that was your choice or not, you might be surprised, but, you know, something was hard.
Yes.
And at this moment when you most need to have kind of kindness and support and things to go right for you, you enter, if you go to court and have an adversarial relationship, you enter the biggest fight of your life.
Yes.
At the moment when you, that's the last thing you want.
Yes. And if you recall the emotions you had with each divorce, and you can just feel them for a minute, you know it. There's heartbreak, there's loss. Your emotions are like kind of thrown up in the air, and you feel like you're catching each one, you know, trying to bring yourself back to center, but you're not centered at all because everything is changing and you have to move or sell things or agree to things. So it's just a very difficult time, and especially if there are children, you really want the parties to try and do what's best for the kids and not struggle like that.
Yeah.
You know, put them in the middle and all of that.
Right.
That's ugly.
Yeah, I know. People use their kids as a weapon.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And you wonder how long that child will be on the couch. You know, on a psychiatrist's couch.
Yeah.
I
remember when my parents got divorced, I think I was like 18, 19. I think when I left home to go to college, my mom just looked around and said, "What the hell am I doing here?" And so, you know, right then, boom. And so my parents encouraged me to go to see a therapist when I was, you know, 18, 19. I was thinking about that the other day. I don't remember what happened. I don't know if it was that productive. You know, I mean, it was all very new. We had never done that before. They were getting divorced. I didn't kind of... I mean, I guess I understood, but you don't know what
did
that
you expect
means.
It?
Not really, but then I wasn't necessarily surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And they did the typical thing where every time I spent time with one of them, they would complain about the other person.
Ooh, see, that's not good.
That was bad.
True. Yeah.
You know, and then as a kid, my sister, the same thing. Your choice is you either agree...
Yeah.
Or you defend the other person.
Yeah. I think it's, whenever a parent speaks negatively about the other parent, to me it's like a, not a knife, but it's like a, well, I'm going to call it a dagger.
Yeah.
In the child's heart.
Yeah.
You, that's just not, it's painful for a child, I think.
So did you answer your divorce? Was it easy? Was it difficult?
Oh, it was tricky, but we made it through without scorching the earth, yeah. Which was a good thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any advice for someone who is getting divorced? Like, what's the way to get through this with the least amount of, stress?
Stress. I think if people are emotionally suffering, you know, as part of the divorce, they should really see a therapist to deal with that issue because that will help, certainly. And I think finding the right adversary for yourself, you know, meeting with perhaps different lawyers, see who you feel you can work best with that shares your values and ideas.
Yes.
And answer your questions and try and do it as expeditiously, as cost efficient and entertaining if you can. I always try and add levity.
Add entertainment.
Yeah, because it helps. It gets us through the day.
Plus, it's Los Angeles. I mean,
right?
A little,
yeah, you need a little entertainment.
Tell a couple of jokes in there.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Make fun of the other side. Just kidding.
No, that's good. You can do that when they're there. Obviously.
You can. Hey, you know. Well, you know. And sometimes people are so foolhardy, they bring their new significant other with them to court. Like, hi, here's my new babe. Or, hi, here's my rugged, handsome stud. You know, who does that? They inflame the other side. Or some women dress up with low-cut dresses, you know, and they say to them, why are you so decked out? Or, you know, for court. Well, I want him to see how fabulous I am.
Totally. I know. Right. I want him to see what he's losing.
Right.
What he gave
exactly.
up. Or he fucked up that, you know.
Yeah. Hair done, full makeup, you know.
Go away with that dental hygienist. I'll show him.
Right.
Yeah.
Fabulous. I love people. They're so entertaining.
People are weird.
Aren't they great?
Yeah.
people
are
love
totally
them.
Weird. Yeah. Well, then you're in a you have
I'm
a great
in the right
seat.
Place.
You have a great
I have a great seat.
Kind of
I do.
Yeah.
And I think I'm lucky for that.
Yeah. Now, you know, I mean, I thought of you for this show. I think I mentioned to you because I had a guy in a few weeks ago. What's his name? Jordan Brady.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember him?
Yes, I certainly do.
I don't know how long ago that was, but we were talking about his divorce.
Yes.
And he said that, you know, he started to try to just kind of represent himself and that that was a mistake.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
Because his wife's lawyer just crushed him.
Yeah.
Not in a violent way, but, you know.
That was good. Yeah.
Judge said, Ms. Schwartz, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, wait a minute. You know,
yeah, that was
Ms. Schwartz?
Very cute. Yeah.
Yes. And I said, Link Schwartz? And he said, yeah. Do you know her? So you were his wife's attorney.
Yes.
He didn't have anything bad to say, even before
he
knew.
Yeah, no, that was a good thing.
He was like,
because, you know, he's fine. I mean,
he's a nice guy.
He's, you know, a solid guy.
Yeah.
But there are litigants who have burned down family law attorneys' homes. I've had death threats from the other side.
Yes.
I had a Tarasoff warning from a shrink. Tarasoff being someone, it's a legal term from a case, and the person was, the litigant was at his shrink's office and said, I'm on my, going to kill Link Schwartz.
Uh-huh.
I've got a rifle on the front seat of my car, and I'm going to take her out. So the shrink is under an obligation to call the person, called me and said, this guy's on his way to kill you. So we had to lock down the building, a big building in Century City, which was not easy. And
must have made you really popular with your neighbors.
Oh, yeah. But you have immediate guilt because your front line is receptionist, and I don't want someone coming in and killing anybody. And then
does the therapist have to call the police, or they just call the...
They call me.
They call you.
And we contacted the police.
Yeah.
And then after that, I didn't go into the office. I had to dress differently so that he wouldn't recognize me. And, you know, the best costume to wear or outfit, because I was thinking wigs.
Clown outfit.
No, but clown would be fabulous because, you know, I love clowns and I know your background is clown.
We're going to ask them.
Clowning,
What's better?
But messenger. No one looks at your face.
Uh-huh.
So hair back, you know, the cap,
bicycle.
The T-shirt, no one looked at me.
No one looked at you.
They don't look at your face.
Yeah.
Notice that. I mean, when you see a messenger, if you're in an elevator, no one's looking at the person's face, ever.
Nobody ever looks at them, though. No. Well, I read this book a long time ago where the dad inappropriately was teaching the daughter about dazzle camouflage. That if you want to camouflage, dress as brightly and as wild, you know, like really make a lot of noise, because then people look away from you.
Really?
And also they see the thing and they write you off immediately.
And they don't really see
They don't recognize
face.
You. Yeah. So, you know, if you don't want to be recognized, dress as a clown, party clown with balloons, you know, squeaky shoes.
That would be fun, too. Right.
Yeah. Well, I did have a question about this last point, because I looked at your website the other day, and I realized that none of the photos on the website are of you or any of the people in your office. They're all generic photos. And and my question was, is that because for safety?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
We thought about it. At one time, we did put people. But, you know, we're very, very careful. We don't ever use our, you know, all the addresses and all personal information is to the office, never to the home. And I'm very protective of people, too, who work with me or that I work for, because it's, you just can't trust
people. You can't.
People.
You don't know what's going to happen.
No.
People are crazy.
Yes,
and,
they
and
are.
This moment makes us more crazy than normal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had an attempted assassination via internet in 2012.
How
was horrendous.
Try to assassinate you via the internet?
It was a case where I represented this woman forever, and we were in court, and the judge, everything I asked for, the judge ordered, because the guy was, he just could not follow any court order. He started a new family and never looked back at the old family, children to support, refused to support them. So I really stuck it to the guy as best I could legally. And the judge agreed and stuck it to this litigant. So what he did was, he went on, his business actually was reputation management. So he went on the internet and anonymously stated that I was his lawyer, and went on his other anonymous people and just had a party bashing me. And I had to deal with that, and it's just insane.
Some of those are
for
still
no
out there.
Reason. Well, just
I mean, I've read some.
Yes, yes, right? And so that's the guy. Yeah. And what it was amazing.
Because if you're going to hire a lawyer or somebody, you know, you see what other people have to say.
Yes.
So I saw.
But some of it was so comical. Did you see? Like she gave her the file in a shopping bag or something.
I don't remember, but some of it. I mean, as I read more
it's
and more,
horrendous.
I said this can't possibly be
it's
true.
Right.
So
no.
Then,
right.
And that's when I called you.
Yes. Like, this and I thought nobody would believe this. But unfortunately, people did.
Yeah.
Some people did.
Well, yeah, so, some people. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the scary things that could happen to anybody. And I went to the feds. You know, I went to the FBI because he also impersonated me, opened a website in my name, and on the website said how bad I am. And I thought, oh, my God, you're, like, so mental.
Unclear on the concept. Hello.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they laughed at me. They said, are you kidding? Everybody's doing this to each other. We can't be. We can't take care of this. This is nothing.
This is nothing.
Hi, it's my life.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people are going through that.
Yes. Yeah, it happens. Now, we mentioned clowns.
Yes.
And so for you, clowns, are they funny, friendly, scary, creepy?
Oh, I love clowns.
You love clowns.
I have clown shoes.
Clown shoes.
Yes, they
well,
were
tell
made.
Tell me about those.
Yeah, they were made by John the Clown Shoemaker.
Okay.
Who was a real clown shoemaker, and
with
I
a
just,
name like that, you should be because
you should,
you're,
right,
often,
you're not
going to get beat up.
You're
a lot.
Real especially if you're a doctor.
Yeah.
Or, you know. And the cutest thing I remember when I got them, I had them, I designed them, and he said to me, "Do you need a clown purse?" And I thought I would die. It was the sweetest thing anyone ever asked me in my life. That was very touching. But I said no, and he said, "Where will you put your balloons?" Well, how sweet is that? It was so endearing.
And why did you get them made?
Fascinated. Yeah, he's a real clown shoemaker, and I wanted to see what he does and how he comes up with them.
Yes.
I should have brought them.
Yeah.
I'll
send
see
me
you.
A picture.
Yes.
Do you wear them ever?
Yes, I used to wear them if I had open school night at the children. I have three kids at their school. I always put on my clown shoes to embarrass them.
Yeah, of course.
Because that's important.
No. I think that's hugely important.
And they loved it.
Yeah. So. And so how big are they? I mean,
they're
they
huge.
Like 2 feet?
Yes.
18 inches?
And you know how the front is so wide?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I have, you know, different colors that represents each of the kids
and
the stars. And they're fabulous. I love my clown shoes.
And so, but in general, you like clowns? Like party clowns? Or,
yeah.
And so what are they? What
a
is
good
that
clown.
For you? When you look or see a clown, what brings you joy?
Just, I guess, their happiness. And there's a sparkle. There's just an inner and outer fun concept to me about a clown. How could you? I could never be sad with a clown, I don't think, unless it's a sad clown. But I've never seen a sad clown, have you?
Oh, yeah.
You did?
Some of the most famous clowns in history are sad kind of clowns.
Really? Which ones?
There's a guy, what's his name? Great Grimaldi. What's his name? Joseph Grimaldi?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe about 100 years ago. And there's a famous story where he was so depressed,
mm-hmm.
right? Because a lot of comedians, comics are struggle. He was so depressed, he went to the psychiatrist and was sitting there and was complaining and saying, like, I don't think I can go on. How do I keep doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And the psychiatrist started to laugh and said, I know the thing for you. Go to the circus and see the Great Grimaldi. You will laugh. You will laugh. I guarantee you will turn things around. You'll see mm-hmm. there's a better tomorrow. And the guy says, well, I am the Great Grimaldi.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You know, I think for me, you know, clowns, there are sad clowns.
Yeah.
Because clowns.
Yeah, that's true.
Clowns suck.
As I think about it, I.
Yeah. Clowns are not competent creatures. You know
why
what I mean?
Is that?
You know, the archetype of a clown
mm-hmm.
or the jester or the fool is one of the oldest archetypes in human history.
Yes.
And that character of the fool, you know, that's more of like a medieval kind of era. But, you know, in more ancient times, that was a role of the shaman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the shaman is a person who can travel between worlds,
mm-hmm.
right? Between the worlds of life and death.
Yes.
They take on animal forms and they, you know, bring other forces into the world
mm-hmm.
through their body. And so now what we have is, you know, clowns, they're just not good at anything, right?
Yeah.
They embody all of the worst parts of us as humans.
Yes, that's true.
Clowns in various are stupid, they're vain, they're proud, they're clumsy, they're arrogant, they don't listen well, they don't follow directions. You know, whatever they try to do is difficult.
Yeah. Well, maybe I need to rethink my love of clowns.
But
I do love them.
Well, but I think it's okay that you love them, right? Because even with all these problems.
That is, there's a big problem.
They keep going.
Yeah.
Right? This thing that you said that they sparkle.
Mm-hmm.
They are optimistic that they will succeed this time.
Yeah.
Even if they, and we watch them keep not
fumble
doing it.
Yeah, fumble and, yeah.
Right?
That's true.
They keep trying like, oh, I know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the early times I went to do some clown work with a teacher. The assignment he gave us, he said, okay, you're going to stand up on this chair and you're going to remove a light bulb and put in a new light bulb because the light is out.
Right.
And that's all great.
Right.
And as soon as you finish, you're going to realize that you don't know how to get down from the chair.
Right.
And you're going to have 15 minutes. Everybody's working on their own in different parts of the room. Find as many ways as possible to not be able to get down. And it's terrifying because you're like, what do you mean? I know how to get down.
Right.
How do I not?
How do I not get down?
And then how many ways can there possibly be?
Yes.
But that was the work. That was the work.
And did you find out how many ways?
I mean, that day I did. I mean, in theory, there's an infinite number of ways to.
Yeah.
To not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I could think of only one, which is not getting down. Well, I don't think I'd make a good clown.
Well, you might, because there's a moment, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep coming back to the sparkle. There's a sparkle that a clown has. The clown finishes the light bulb, looks around, realizes, oh shit, I don't know how to get down.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that moment of recognition.
Yeah.
And then you say, I know.
Right.
I have an idea.
Right.
I'm going to try this. And you try it,
and
it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to realize that. And so now you have another third moment.
Yes.
Of like, oh, crap, now what?
Another idea.
I know. Right? Yes. And we love to see that.
Yes.
Oh.
Right.
Yes, because there's that moment of optimism.
Yes.
And then he's so dumb or clumsy or lost.
Yes.
You know, we see the things that he or she doesn't see. So we're laughing.
Yeah.
So we laugh at our stupidity.
That's true. Yes.
We laugh at their, you know, inability to do things.
So maybe that makes us feel better about ourselves.
I think we recognize ourselves in those moments.
Yes.
And then we're also partly happy that it's them and not us at this moment.
I could see that. Yeah.
And they don't give up. Like, they keep going.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I have a story that I tell sometimes on stage that my son is now 11. But when he was 8, he, you know, was running through the living room. He fell down. He started to cry. And I laughed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with tears in his eyes, he gets up and he says, "Why are you laughing that I got hurt?"
Yeah.
Like, wow, now I have to really answer this question. I can't just blow him off. So I told him this long thing about when bad things happen to other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. As long as they're not really hurt.
Yes.
Which I knew he wasn't. He was crying, but he wasn't really hurt. And it was his fault. He left some toys out. You know, I mean, he deserved it in my mind. So that was funnier. But if you get up and you keep going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and at the end of the story, I said, look, everyone falls down.
Yes.
Clowns bounce.
That's true. They do.
That's what clowns do. Clowns bounce.
How long were you a clown for?
I have done training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, everyone says you're a clown. You go to clown school. I guess if you go to law school, you're a lawyer.
Yeah.
But if you go to, I did a couple weekends, and then I found this Italian teacher. And he goes to Boulder, Colorado every kind of August, September, October. Mm-hmm. So one year I went and spent 4 weeks doing like full-time, 6 days a week of work with this guy and his group. And the next year I went back for 6 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you loved it?
Yeah, no, it was brutal. It was, oh my God. It was the worst thing I have ever chosen to do. I'm not counting my divorces because I never chose those. Those were chosen for me.
They chose you.
They chose me.
Yeah.
It is so challenging. The thing I was mentioning.
Yes, it is.
You don't create a creature. You kind of discover, right? You do some improvisation and a thing starts to come alive for you.
And so each person evolves into their own character then?
And it's based on things that are really wrong with you.
Yeah.
That's the key, right?
That's
if you're a fat
fabulous.
Person, your costume and your creature is going to like make you bigger and fatter and dumber.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm a little skinny person.
Mm-hmm.
My creatures are angry and, you know, resentful. You know, and sarcastic and insulting to people all the time.
Wow.
And my costumes are always too tight. You know, well, look, however little and skinny I am, my arms and legs are sticking out.
Oh, that's great.
But that's what's challenging, right? There's a guy in my class, he's kind of depressed.
Mm-hmm.
His clown was
the
depressed.
Sad one.
More depressed, you know, and it was heartbreaking to watch his creature constantly struggle with trying to put on a happy face with his internal thing.
Yeah.
But that's what the guy. So this is my point. When you go to clown school, you don't hide anything.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is reveal the parts of yourself, your shadow, that you mostly like to keep hidden. Right?
Interesting. It's so interesting.
So on stage, you're encouraged to let that stuff out and to exaggerate it to grotesqueness.
Yeah.
And that's what we're laughing at. And that's what's so that's what's so really hard about clown work.
But I would think if people find their clown persona, then perhaps they can grow through it. I think it could be a very helpful thing.
It is really great. I mean, I learned a lot about myself and for exactly this reason, right? The things that are in the shadow, we tend to want to push them away, and that's what repression and denial are for, and those can be useful. But if you can make friends with this, these parts
with
of
this
you
dark side.
That you don't like, then you now you've changed your relationship with it.
I like it.
So what's in your shadow?
I don't know. I'd have to go to clown school, I think, right?
Come on.
Don't you think?
You're a lawyer. You're a divorce lawyer. You've been married, divorced. You raise kids. So here, look. Yeah. Everybody has voices in our head that say crappy things to us. And those are some of our shadow voices.
I'm an overachiever because I don't think, I'll never think I'm really smart enough, good enough, whatever. And so I'll be the one who overstudies, overprepares, but it gives me confidence. So I think I probably lack some form of confidence. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Okay. And so those voices that say you're never good enough, is it ever hard for you to deal with that? I mean, you obviously are familiar with them.
Yeah. You know. For me, it's, I find a level of calmness if I'm very prepared, and I always want to do the best job for my client, too, so that's key.
Sure.
But it takes an awful lot of work for most people anyway. Just the 5 minutes you're in court or an hour or 10 minutes goes so well because you've done all the preparation and put in
hours
all the
worth
time.
Of preparation for that. Yeah.
So that's part of it, too. So I can't say it's just me because we all do that. But that's something I'm going to think about. What would be my clown side?
So here's something to think about.
Yes.
Don't answer. I'm just going to ask some questions see what comes up for you. So you're familiar with the voice in your head that says you're not smart enough, you're not good enough, you're not, you know, competent, you know.
Yeah.
It's possible, since this creature has a voice, that it has also a physical appearance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll call it your gremlin. This is your gremlin that is in the back of your mind telling you you're not enough of something. You can envision, try to see, is your gremlin a human creature? Is it some other kind of creature? What is this person wearing? Skin tone, voice, any aspects of this creature? When this voice talks to you in the head, is it a high voice, a low voice? What do you think? What do you hear?
We're drawing a blank on it. I don't see, and I'm pretty visual, but I don't see any particular affectation of this person. I mean, I don't see.
I'm going to think about it, though.
It's so interesting.
I have a book, which is called Taming Your Gremlin.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy is this Richard Carson. He's a psychologist. And his work and the book is about this, tuning into that negative voice that we usually try to push it away, really listening to it and starting to write down what does it say and what kind of creature is this speaking to me.
Right.
So he tells stories about his clients, right? For some of the clients, the gremlin is a priest.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, it's a drill sergeant in the army. For some people, it's a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a parent. It looks just like them. It looks like their kid, you know.
Yeah.
So this is his work that he does with people.
That's wonderful.
Get more connected to this thing that we usually try to push away. And as you've kind of intimated, even though we say it's a negative voice that kind of cuts you down, there's wisdom there.
Oh, I think
there's something trying to protect you and help you in some way.
Yeah.
But even if it's afraid and it comes out negatively, it's got good intentions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've made peace with it so long ago.
Yeah.
And actually, it's not terribly scary, but it's interesting. And I do want to read the book. I think that'll be fun.
Taming Your Gremlin.
Okay.
Richard Carson.
Got it.
Yeah. Well, when you're 20, you know, it's different than when you're 40 or 70. I mean, you know, like at some point, you kind of hope.
You've made peace with them.
I have. I'll tell you, here's my, the first time I went and did some work with this teacher.
Mm-hmm.
we start to improvise, and the clown, as I said, kind of comes out. Mm-hmm. And the creature that came out for me, I could see, thought that he was smarter and prettier than all the other clowns.
Wow.
And I instantly recognized that there's a part of me mm-hmm. that feels that.
That's great.
And I was appalled. I was embarrassed. I was kind of disgusted. Mm-hmm. And I did not want to show it off to people. I did not want to mm-hmm. out myself as being yeah. this guy yeah. on any level.
Yeah.
And I hated my clown. I really did not like him. And I didn't want other people to see him. But I was there for a weekend, and my job was to...
Yeah.
And so at the end of the weekend, to the teacher, I said, thank you and fuck you. And he left, and he said, you'll be back.
Yes,
and he was right. Like, yeah. The next year, I yeah. signed up. I was like,
that's
okay,
good.
Let's
I'm
do
glad
some more
you
of this.
Did.
Yeah.
Because you got to face those things.
I'm not... that's the one thing I know that I do really well, mm-hmm. is when I find things that kind of scare me or freak mm-hmm. me out, I go towards them.
That's good.
That's how I got married 3 times.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, you never know.
Well, I didn't realize it until the 3rd one. Mm-hmm. And I started doing some stand-up comedy. And as I mentioned.
Yeah.
And honestly, one day I was on stage and I say, the thing is, when you get divorced for the 3rd time, you realize that you kind of lose the right to say, oh, that was a mistake.
Right.
And you got to at least be open to the idea that maybe it's not a mistake. Maybe none of them were a mistake.
But you see, you are every divorce lawyer's dream. I love a serial marrier.
Oh.
Yes, we love you.
Repeat business, yeah.
I have serial marriers who actually say in the beginning of the, you know, when they're getting married, they'll call me and say, you know, I think I'm going to come in and give you the money now.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I'm getting married and I know I'm going to pay you.
Yeah. Can we start a payment plan
right.
so it's not
yeah,
so
right.
painful later?
Yeah.
It's like a 501 college.
Yeah. Oh, wait. And I'll make you feel even better. I represented this one guy who he and his wife, you know, I represented him in the divorce. Then they remarried. Very dramatic.
I don't know how people
so
do that.
So dramatic.
Okay.
The second time they divorced again. And I said, okay, 2 divorces and 2 remarriages. And I said, you may not darken my doorstep again. Because they were so dramatic.
They got divorced, they got remarried, then they got divorced, that they wanted
yes.
to get married again?
Yes.
They wanted to get married for the 3rd time?
Yes. Yes.
And you said, okay, but I'm out.
I'm out.
Just stay
I'm
away.
I'm done with you. Because they were fun.
Yeah.
And entertaining, but so dramatic.
And profitable,
I mean,
but
really,
still.
Yeah, but yeah. it was like, I was done with them.
Yeah, I can see at some point you're like, I'm just losing heart for the story.
You know right,
I
mean? Yeah. Like it's the same thing.
Star Wars 7.
What are you not learning? And then this was another favorite. These, I represented the first wife in a divorce. Okay, she gets divorced. So the guy remarries, and they make friends, the 2 women. So when it's time for them to get divorced, wife 2 comes to me. Anyway, I did 3 and I did 4. Well, I did 3, and then the 3 wives brought the 4th one in, and we're all sitting in my conference room. And I said, this is like Oprah. Because, you know, they all became friends.
So you have 4, you've represented four of this guy's ex-wives.
Yeah.
It's not the guy who had the rifle that was going to kill you.
No, a different guy. But it's so interesting to me. You know, and all the wives, the
exes
were
friends. They all got along.
Yeah.
They all agreed about his shortcomings.
He's a douche. And look, you know.
That's so funny. They all agree about what a kind of jerk he is in the same way.
Yeah,
oh,
they all
yeah,
married.
He did that
yeah.
to me, too. That's
Isn't
so
that
funny.
Hilarious?
Yeah, like I want to interview all 4 of them.
Yes.
Right?
I have to see if I can dig back in my files.
That's
it was
really
a while
funny.
Ago. But
now I'm
so
envisioning the meeting.
Oh, that was so
they all come and they're having a great time
fun.
And they're
yes.
drinking coffee. And
that was great.
They're like, oh,
yeah.
honey, I understand.
Right,
we
yeah.
got divorced. Yeah.
Isn't that hilarious?
All right, I got a couple more weird questions
yes.
for you.
Love weird.
You have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual.
I do.
What is it?
Oh, I don't. I really don't. Really don't.
No?
No, does everyone have one? Am I
missing? No, it's just me fishing. Some people say no. Some people say, but the people who say yes.
Do they? What things do they do?
I guess last week talked about her sleep walking, sleep talking, sleep eating.
Yeah, people do that.
And the one time that she opened the refrigerator and peed into the vegetable drawer.
Oh, wow.
And
I'm glad I don't have
it
that.
Until the next morning.
Wow.
Some people have, like, socks. They have to sleep with socks. Some people can't sleep with anything. I mean, I don't know. People.
Yeah. Do you have one?
You know what? Mine is that I have a little, a hat, like a cap that I pull over my head, like a beanie.
Nice. Yeah.
Because I don't have much hair.
Mm-hmm.
And even in L.A., my head gets kind of cold.
Mm-hmm.
And when I lived in San Francisco, it was really important.
Yes, it's cool.
But what I've discovered is that it comes down over my eyes and covers my, and it covers my ears a little bit. And so it's just,
I bring it
on the airplane, and when I want to take a nap, I just like pull this little beanie thing over my head.
That's kind of smart.
I used to have it's gray. I used to have a black one because I realized if we're in bed together and you wake up and I'm kind of have like an executioner's mask, you might
could be a little
freak
scary.
Out a little. Yeah, especially in the beginning. So I just switched to
it's a little more gentle.
Neutral color. Yeah.
That was, or red would be festive.
Red would be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
That's why in the Scrooge, you know, they have those long, they used to have those long stocking
caps. Yes, with
caps.
The stocking, yeah.
But I never, why are they so long?
I guess that was the style.
That's just the fashion part.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like there's a very cute commercial with the very tall hats.
Very tall
hats.
Have
you seen it?
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. It's just like the high hats, and it's just cute.
What's it a commercial for?
It's actually a commercial for investing for your future retirement.
Okay.
But
all right.
It's cute.
I'm just curious to see if you actually remembered what it was for. But
yeah.
Okay, here's another question. As a child, you had an imaginary friend.
No.
No? Okay.
No. I had enough drama in my life to
enough
not
enough drama.
Need, yeah.
But that sometimes is a reason that people do have an imaginary friend.
I think I'm very creative. I'm also an artist when I'm not lawyering.
You're not beating the shit out of people in court. Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of kind of just not... I became very spiritual, too, which is great. And that's taken me pretty far as well.
Yeah.
But never, you know, a fantasy character.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Sometimes people say yes to that.
Yeah.
I mean, the rest of that question says, when you were a child, you had an imaginary friend. Your imaginary friend had an imaginary friend.
Yes.
Because that has happened. Where are they now?
Yeah.
Again, you'd be surprised.
That's really fun.
I just know a kid who has an imaginary friend, and her imaginary friend has an imaginary friend.
Wow.
And I just...
That's a lot of people.
I just always thought, wow, that's cool. I ask her how the imaginary friend is all the time.
Wow.
I want to keep it alive.
And are they... does she still see them? Or was it just in
childhood? No, as far as I know. She's only 7 now.
Oh, okay.
So as far as
it's not like
there,
she's 40 and she still has them.
But I ask because I want to keep it alive because I just think it's so weird.
It's fabulous.
That your imaginary friend...
I think it's entertaining.
...has an imaginary friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I like to do, we're almost out of time.
Mm.
Time flies. Is to anagram stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just sometimes you see interesting things. And... you're the first guest that I've had that I tried to anagram your name, and there were no anagrams. Link Schwartz.
Really?
Doesn't anagram to anything.
Really?
At all.
Wow.
I saw that your middle initial is K. I didn't know what that stood for, I could have made that, but I didn't have all those letters, so.
Oh, wow.
Link Schwartz, Link K. Schwartz, and doesn't anagram to anything. So I anagrammed divorce attorney.
Mm-hmm.
One thing interesting is it said 100,001 anagrams for divorce attorney.
Wow.
It's just an interesting number.
Yes.
It's kind of palindromatic.
Yeah.
Palindromatic.
I love words. You know, words are so entertaining.
Yeah, well, you're a lawyer. Any of those craved notoriety, you know, any of those interesting to you?
Your positive approach to life helps.
Yeah, you're reading my questions.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Crave notoriety. No. Rarely covered. Overdue certainty. Well, overdue certainty has something to do with law, of course, because, you know, you want to be certain about your legal theories and your statutes,
so you want to overdo
and cases.
It.
Well, you want to win for your client. Yeah. So you want as much legal argument as you can get. So, and that would certainly be that. A decoy introvert. How would you do that?
Look, I don't know. You know, these are the closest things.
It's so interesting.
Some of them, you know, some of them I look at them and I say, I get an image.
Yeah.
Ornery tot advice.
I love that one.
Right? I mean, I saw. Why do you love that one?
I love it because, you know, I have twin grandsons.
Okay.
And their toddler speak entertains me more than you can imagine. And they are so amusing, you can die laughing all the time. Like, one tells me where his forehead is and that he has a head for. So he has two. He has a head for and a forehead.
And a forehead. Are they in the same place?
No, they're in different... The middle of your forehead is your head for,
yeah,
and back up on your head is your forehead.
So they're connected.
Yes.
They're adjacent.
They're adjacent.
Forehead adjacent is the head for.
Right.
Okay.
But don't you love a head for?
Yeah.
And they make everything exciting and funny. You know, their throats, their float, and they flew up instead of throwing up. They're flowing.
That's
up.
That's always funny.
But isn't that great? And it's
up,
so it's so expressive because I float up. You do flow up.
Well, that's what this is too, right? So when we say ornery tot advice, I see a kind of chubby, balding, middle-aged guy getting divorced, throwing a temper tantrum in court.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So that's what I mean, right?
Yeah.
We anagram divorce
But
attorneys.
This is great. Rancid every toot.
Rancid every toot. What do you see? Got an image or you got a scenario?
No, I just see something, you know, a rancid, vile person.
Hmm. Well, my kid calls farts toots.
Yeah.
So I think that one I saw.
That could just be a big nasty,
you know, a divorce
fart.
Attorney that anytime they open their mouth, something bad comes out. You know?
That could be.
That's what I got. Acid envoy retort.
Yes. The envoy I'm not picking up on, but of course retorts are
that's
part of my life.
An envoy is a messenger, right? Yeah, all right. All right, so that didn't really add any value.
No, but that was fun.
That's the story of my
and
life.
Interesting.
Fun, you know, it doesn't add much value,
well,
but you know.
Yeah, but it makes you think, and that's interesting.
All right.
You're fabulous, Denzel.
Oh.
You are. You're awesome.
Thank you. You told me a good joke when I was in your office last time. I don't remember.
Remember
what it was.
What?
No, it wasn't a lawyer joke.
Don't.
But you also seem like a person that has
a good joke.
Oh, you have a good sense of humor. So.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, it's carried me far.
It does. It's useful.
And I also love to laugh. I heard a. Did you watch Bill Maher's show?
Sometimes.
So in the last Bill Maher, they did 25 things you don't know about Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
And my very best favorite one was he combs his hair with a balloon.
And I like that one.
Right?
Because it makes it more staticky and it comes out. Yes,
yes. And just the word balloon's funny.
Balloon.
So I keep laughing about it.
Yeah.
You know, and I love those kinds of jokes, the visuals.
Yes. Combs his hair with a balloon. His hair has gotten a little more restrained.
More kempt.
Well, now, you know, I mean, in the past, like, 8 months that he's gone from this guy that nobody really knew who the hell he was, he's running for president, he started to actually comb his hair.
Yeah. Well, he probably got a smaller balloon.
He got a smaller balloon.
The other thing is, the source of comedy from this election cycle is amazing, right?
We got to laugh or else we would cry or shoot somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's really funny.
I'm fascinated, you know,
me
because
too. It's getting to be a bad addiction for me. That's all I kind of watch right now. And I'm kind of upset with myself, but I'm also told it's like, kind of like the train wreck that you can't take your eyes off.
Yep.
And also it's a reality show, but it's real. I mean, it's...
Nobody knows what's going to happen. Like, what the conversation this week is, we're going to have a national election, right? Millions of people are going to vote. And the two people who are running, most people actively dislike both of them.
Yeah.
Like, both of these people, their negative numbers are 60+%.
Yeah.
And these are the two people somehow that have won their nominations.
Yeah. But if you...
That's crazy.
Yeah. At least, though, if we look at the Democratic side...
Yeah.
The experience is there. The wisdom's there.
Yeah. You know
at least you know that. The other one is such a loose cannon and is said... the craziest things I've ever heard in my life.
And you, that's coming from a woman who spends a lot of time in divorce court.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Wow.
Well.
But at least we have a lot of comedy from it.
We do. I've been trying to tell people that about the Founding Fathers.
Mm-hmm.
The Founding Fathers, when they designed our form of government... You know, they were arguing the entire time, fighting, you know,
and
they didn't actually agree on hardly anything. But what they did was they put together a system of government with these three branches that are checks and balances, and it's designed pretty much to frustrate everybody that's involved. It's balances of power. So if you're the president, you're not the king.
Right.
If you're the Supreme Court, you don't have ultimate power, the legislature also. And so, in a way... this is exactly what the Founding Fathers planned, was, you know, a crazy mashup of people constantly struggling for power and control, and no one really able to get enough where they can do what they want. Yeah. And that is the genius of our system.
Yeah.
So if Donald Trump or any of these people are elected president, the best news I have to tell you is that the Founding Fathers made it so they won't really be able to do any of the crap that they promised.
Right.
That's the good news.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to thank our very special guest, Link Schwartz.
Thank you so much.
This was
just pure joy. Spending time with you is pure joy. Next time we should do this with our clown accoutrement.
Accoutrement.
Yeah.
Clown
accoutrement. I mean, I'll bring my clown shoes. You have more to wear than I do.
In my other bag, I always have a squeaky toy and a clown nose, but it wasn't in this bag.
Oh, I'm sad.
I should send you a clown nose. Do you have
I don't have a clown nose.
Yeah, that's easy.
Yeah.
If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can mail me at Comedy Death Star at acsdigital.tv. I also want to start to sell a rainbow unitard.
Ooh.
Because it sounds like rainbow unicorn, but a unitard is like what Jack LaMaine
would
wear.
So you're
going to
do it in, it's all a rainbow?
Rainbow unitard, yeah. Like a onesie. Yeah,
I like it.
I'm going to see if anybody wants one of those. You know, now you can get things made like on demand. I don't have to order 500 and then have them. Mm-hmm. Dylan Vigil is our producer and engineer. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. Very nice guy, friend of mine. You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio, right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week. Thanks again, Link.
Thank you.